I'm Julie Bullitt. I've been a family therapist for over 30 years.
I'm David Bullitt. I've been a divorce and family lawyer for more than 35 years.
Together, we have been married for more than 37 years.
In our professional practices, the two of us have been witnesses to individuals and families struggling with life's most difficult challenges. In this podcast, we will talk about the conversations we have had,
the conversations we should have had,
and those that every relationship needs to have in order to find success, happiness, and fulfillment.
This is Conversations for Couples,
the podcast. Welcome to our podcast, Conversations for Couples. Today, we're talking about disagreements in a relationship, arguments in a relationship, fights in a relationship. Should we have them? How do we have them? And how do we get over them? And to help us navigate arguing, fighting, and disagreeing, we've got Deborah Fox with us today, a licensed clinical social worker, a certified, if I pronounce this right, Deborah, imago therapist.
Perfect.
Excellent. A certified sex therapist, and you have your own local practice here in the DC area. So welcome aboard, Deborah. We're so happy to have you here.
Great. My pleasure to be here.
Excellent. So let's start off with, right off the bat, you know, should people fight? People in a relationship, should couples fight?
Well, whether they should or not, they do. So, you know, that's just the way it is. Couples argue. Absolutely.
You know, there was an article in the Washington Post about a year or so ago about this couple that lived in Virginia that swore that after 40 some years of marriage that they never once had a disagreement. We were asked about that on the local Fox show, and both Julie and I said, that just doesn't sound possible to me. What do you think about that?
I would say that maybe it's possible, but they are absolutely the exception.
Okay.
You know, like somebody who's lived 106,
sort of what we thought, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And also I was wondering about what their definition of a fight was. So maybe not like a drag down fight, but you certainly have to have disagreements in relationships. So what do you see in your office as, you know, a therapist, a marital counseling therapist? What do you see most often that people have difficulties with around fighting and disagreements?
Well, I think the biggest difficulty people have is that they just take over, you know, that fights escalate in a flash. So whatever they're arguing about, it just seems to take another course. And they say, you know, I don't even know what started it. And that is the million-dollar question, because it's really true. People don't know what starts so many of their fights, because it just is it's just like a match gets lit. And suddenly somebody shuts down and freezes and walks away, or somebody just gets immediately angry. And then the fight is just off and running, and it sort of has a life of its own and isn't even connected probably to what started it.
But are there certain areas, when we did our research, there are certain areas that folks tend to find regular and frequent conflicts over that you see?
To me, it's not so much the subject matter. I mean, certainly money is a big one. Parenting styles is a big one. Extended families, you know, relating to them is a big one. Sexuality certainly is a big one. But, you know, I don't think it's the subject matter as much as it is everybody's individual. You know, what are their points of vulnerability? You know, what are their pain points? And those are the ones that get touched regardless of the subject matter. And that's where these fights just get out of control.
So how do you help couples learn each other's touch points, you know, raw vulnerabilities, the triggers? How do you help couples with identifying that and then doing something different with their partner?
Right. The most important question. And, you know, it's not obvious. So it's so important to look at the very first seconds. I call it the first 30 seconds, but sometimes it's really the first 3 seconds. Is what is it, you know, that snapped in somebody? And it happens so fast, they even lose track of it. So when couples are talking about an argument, And, you know, unfortunately, once these escalations happen, that's where all the hurtful things are said. That's where the pain is. And that's what they want to talk about. And I'll say, you know, I know this really hurt and you said some mean things, but if we're really going to change this, we've got to back up and back up and back up. What was the very first moment that you can remember, or even before the moment? And I've had, you know, couples nod their heads and they're starting, you can see their eyes, they're starting to track back and they realize, you know, I'm really mad at you about something else, even though we were fighting about, you know, how to cut the chicken for dinner or whatever.
Right. It becomes a cycle, doesn't it? I mean, it becomes a cycle for folks, doesn't it?
Of course, because those same triggers that are outside people's awareness, they keep, it's like a tripwire, a minefield, you know, you keep tripping it over and over again. So people really have to get back to figuring out, oh, it really wasn't that thing we're arguing about. It's really that, you know, I felt like you just weren't listening to me. And that really, that's hard for me. My mm-hmm. mother never listened to me. My father never listened. I never had a voice.
Right. Right. So how do you, you know, how do you identify, how do you sort of give couples like fair playing, you know, fair fighting rules? What are some of the things that you, you know, work with couples with on that?
Yeah, there's really one. And the one is to have a timeout. You know, they can think of a fun word or a creative word or just use the timeout signal. But once they realize they're into a fight, there is nothing they're going to do that's going to come out of that that's going to be good. Because our nervous systems are really designed to protect us. And once we feel offended in some way, you know, we go into survival mode. And it's as if we have a sign that's written across our forehead that says, I no longer care about you. I am busy surviving.
Oh, wow. What a visual. And
Yeah.
What a visual. So,
yeah. So they just have to stop. They have to stop.
Yeah. So one of the things, yeah. So, and that's a great point. And one of the things to sort of further that, you know, timeout, you know, piece mm-hmm. And strategy, which I think is wonderful, is I tell couples that I work with is take a minute, but not a week. So mm-hmm. let's talk about that. Yeah. So sort of stopping the process, which is an emotional one, but then also making sure you come back to
Absolutely.
Whatever the issue was.
Yeah, and it's really important to come back when you feel you have really like settled down and you've really reflected on the conversation. And what do you have to apologize for? Even if you think you only caused 2% of that problem, you know, what's your 2%? Because if you can come back and say, you know, I'm sorry that I spoke to you in that tone of voice, even if you felt justified, you know, we don't. And then that totally changes sort of the atmosphere between two people. And hopefully your partner then can do the same. Then you're more likely to have a conversation. And that could be, you know, a minute is probably too short for most people. Mm-hmm. But as you say, a week is like way, you know, too long. So, you know, if it's 20 minutes for one person, it might be 24 for another.
Right. I mean, people are different, right? Right.
People,
I mean,
so
we talk about, you know, Julie's very easy about pivoting. You know, if we have a disagreement, she can pivot pretty rapidly. Sometimes it takes me a little bit longer to sort of move off of that. I don't want to say a grudge, but that sort of, you know, that sort of thing. So in terms of strategies, other than the timing that you talked about, you've got a couple in your office, they're fighting regularly, regardless of what the topic is. You know, what kind of strategies can folks employ, or do you work with folks to employ in order to help them get through those types of disagreements?
Well, once they learn to stop, which is a big one, that's a skill.
Right.
That's a skill.
Absolutely.
The next skill is what I was saying is about the apology. And then it's how do you talk about difficult things? And the biggest skill there is listening. Until one person has the floor until they are finished.
Yeah.
And
so
now
taking
in my
turns.
Office, yeah. Yeah. In my office, you know, I sort of control that. It's not forever. But, you know, when they, what they want to learn in my office, they want to take out into their real lives. Mm-hmm. And that listening skill is critical. And when the other person is finished, if they can tell them what they heard, you know, here's what I understand you said, because so often we're not listening fully and we misinterpret, we misunderstand. And that's where, you know, fights can bubble up again.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's huge.
That is big. So talk to us about the mind-body connection and the work that you do with couples. I'm very intrigued about how you bring that into, you know, couples work.
Yeah. So a lot of what goes on in us is what I say is beneath words. And our bodies hold a lot of information that we are not aware of. And we call that implicit memory. And implicit memory is simply what allows you to ride a bike after 20 years when maybe you haven't been on a bike. You don't have to think, how do I ride a bike? You know, you just get on the bike and ride it. But when difficult things happen to us in life, we often sort of, they're uncomfortable. We put them out of our mind. But the implicit memory holds on to them if they have been significantly, you know, bad experiences. And so really exploring that almost in sensations. Like if you get anxious or you get angry or you get sad, often you might have some physiological sensations. You might have a tightness in your chest or your throat, or your face gets hot, or your heart starts beating, or you have a knot in your belly. And those are actually the way the body talks.
So how do you use those? I mean, you're helping couples identify them in themselves, but also for their partner.
Yes. Yeah. It's a twofer process. So if somebody says, I just have this knot in my belly when I talk about this. And just, I'll simply say, if that knot in your belly had a voice, what would it say right now? And I will tell you, different things come out, because what's usually coming out from those questions is not necessarily what's cognitively available to them. You know, what they don't know it in their brain at that moment. But if they tune into that knot in their belly, that knot has something to say.
You know, that's interesting, because a couple of months ago, we had, Julie and I had a bumpy period, right? Everybody does. And I remember saying to her, you know, I'm walking around I just feel like, you know, I weigh 100 pounds more than I usually do. And it was all of this whole, you know, swirl, perfect storm of issues were just weighing on me. And I did feel that way physically, really did. I mean, you know, I'm out walking. I felt like I was walking slower. I felt like I was moving slower. I was banging into things all over the place. Mm-hmm. So what do you tell somebody? You know, how do they get over that sort of feeling to move to a better place?
Well, it's the identification first, is what is it you're feeling? You know, right. And sometimes if you really pay attention to that heaviness and just use lots of words, you know, what is that heaviness like? So, you know, I feel stuck. You know, I feel like I can't move. Or it might come to, I can't feel it. I don't feel like I can do anything right. You know, I feel helpless. So if you tune in to that physicality that you were describing, that heaviness, you might find that you're going to come up with, you know, some feelings or some, just a way of phrasing something that really fits for you. And that might help you identify kind of what's going on beneath, you know, the whatever the argument du jour or the issue that you're trying to sort out or whatever.
And in a couple's environment, you know, so now you've got, you know, we're sitting in your office. Let's take us for example. Okay, we're sitting in your office.
Yeah, we could have used you a few weeks ago.
I'm thinking the same thing, but we got through it. But we're sitting in your office. I've described this feeling. We've talked, you know, how I feel physically. We've talked about what was going on that may have helped cause in some ways that feeling. What's the other partner's role in that whole dynamic?
Well, the other partner's role is, you know, what are they experiencing, right? Because often they've got their own narrative going on. And so,
yeah, so just to kind of take this further. So yes. He feels this way. I'm a therapist. I want to fix it.
Ah, yes. Right. Yeah. Fix it. People have their own struggle, because often we can't fix things either in ourselves or particularly in somebody else.
Or the person in our case that needed some fixing didn't want to feel like a client, right? It's an interesting dynamic. So you've got this, you've got the two perspectives on the same circumstance. I mean, the same thing is happening, but two very different perspectives, right?
Exactly. Because, you live on the planet of David, you live on the planet of Julie, mm-hmm. and sometimes those planets seem like they're in completely different solar systems.
Sure.
And so it really is sort of like crossing a bridge, mm-hmm. to a foreign country. Mm-hmm. Can you go there with wide-eyed curiosity? What is it like over there? Right. How do they eat their food? How do they, cross the street? What are their norms? Mm-hmm. And it's that empathic connection is what we're really looking for. But we can't do that when we're angry or we're highly anxious, we're irritated or we're agitated, snappy. Yeah. We have to get to those deeper places of vulnerability in order to be able to make that connection and understand.
I mean, sometimes, right, people don't come out of that feeling of agitation or anxiety for, certainly not in a 50-minute session with you. It could take days, right?
Right. Or somebody might need their own therapy. Some people, you may see couples that you're like, okay, you need to go do your own work to kind of identify and figure this piece out before you come together as a couple to work on things.
Yeah, there's so many different ways to do this. There's not one right way. I mean, you mentioned, David, 50-minute sessions. I actually work in 90-minute sessions.
Oh, okay.
Because
even better.
When it's a regular, like what traditionally has been an individual session, it feels like you just sat down. You just kind of got into something and then, oops, it's time to leave. So yes, it does take time to sort of go down what I call these layers.
Yeah, I can imagine it can take several sessions, obviously, whether it's 90 minutes.
Oh, sure.
Yeah,
Yes. This is not a quick fix.
Yeah. So right. talk to us, let's pivot a little bit between uh-huh. to the differences. And you're also a sex therapist.
Correct.
So tell us a little bit about, the differences in terms of when you put that, or maybe there aren't any differences, in terms of whether you have two different hats, whether those hats can be worn at the same time. What are the differences? What do you do in this sort of umbrella as a sex therapist that may be different than you do in a normal couples therapeutic environment?
Well, unfortunately, couples therapists and sex therapists are different. And that's some of us are trying to change that, because all couples therapists should become sex therapists and all sex therapists should become couples therapists. There's just been this divide that, is just ridiculous. And so I'm not sure I'm answering your question, but I'll try.
Yeah, that's
so
important
as a
to
sex,
know.
As a sex therapist, you really need to learn so much about couples dynamics, not just about sexuality and sexual function and sexual differences. You need to be a couples therapist, because all the couple, the emotional relationship and sexual relationship have many points at which they intertwine. On the other hand, couples therapists typically do not know enough about sexual functioning. And I've had so many couples come to me and they just haven't gotten well served because of just a knowledge base that was missing. Because mm-hmm. there are some things about sexual relationships that are very specific that therapists absolutely need to know, because the general public does not.
So give us a couple examples.
Sure, I'll give you a big one. So there's actually two different, how much time do we have? But it's coming off when you're ready.
I can
sort of, this is like, pulling one of those doll chains and just start talking. A huge one that the public really needs to know about. And fortunately, there's some books recently that have come out, is about that there are different styles of sexual response. And one is called spontaneous, and that's the one we know about. That's the one that we see in the movies where couples walk into a room, they tear their clothes off, and they can't get enough of each other, and it's as if that goes on forever. Those are the folks that are walking down the street, and if they're 18 years old, about every third thought is a sexual one. Yeah. You know, if they're 35, maybe it goes down to every sixth thought. So that's the
I'm 63 and I don't think it's I've gotten every sixth thought yet. So I'm not in a rush to get there.
He's doing great.
And then there's this mass of humanity that nobody knows about, and it's called responsive sexual desire. And there you go. Julie knows about that one.
Yeah.
And it is more represented by women. Spontaneous desire is more represented by men, but not everybody. I mean, mm-hmm. I just say more. And so for responsive folks, what's so important for them is the context. The context is it's central to their sexuality. It is determinative. And what that means is if a responsive person is preoccupied with a work deadline or a problem with a child, or they're tired, then their openness, they certainly are not thinking about sex, you know. And if their partner, you know, approaches them, it's sort of like, what? You know, it's like not where they are. Whereas with a spontaneous person and they have a little fever and their partner says, hey, you know, you want to have sex? I go, sure, why not? You know,
right.
That's
right.
Very, very different. Mm-hmm. And so couples need to know that this responsive style exists because it's probably their partner. These groups meet each other and they connect up with each other. And so the responsive people tend to think there's something wrong with them.
Right.
And it's just such a shame. So this is a huge one.
Yeah, I imagine that the other folks are trying to figure out what's wrong. Why isn't my responsive partner interested in me? Right.
Absolutely. And this is why it causes so much distress.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because that's what it feels like, that they're not attracted to them. And that's not the issue.
Yeah. And so he's more responsive. He's, you know, less responsive.
You're more responsive.
Are we getting it wrong? What's the other one?
The ones walking down the street thinking about sex frequently, those are the spontaneous people.
Spontaneous. So he's more spontaneous, and okay. I think I'm more responsive.
In case you're taking notes, I'm spontaneous.
So the other thing that I think is important and you're talking about is, for me, conditions have to be right.
Yes. Yes. And that's and central so he could, to responsive people.
Yes. So he could be spontaneous, could be like he saw, you know, something on the TV and he's like ready to go. And I'm like, well,
absolutely.
I'm more like, well, the dishes need to be washed and
exactly.
We need to get the, you know, kids to bed, or we need to do X, Y, and Z. So I'm much more conditional than he is in terms of,
Yes. And that's so common. But what you can just see what happens is David's going to feel you're not attracted to me, or what's wrong with you? And then Julie, you can feel like, what's wrong with me?
Right.
Because society doesn't talk about us responsive people.
Right.
It talks about the spontaneous people. Yes. And so you just feel that something's wrong with you. And this is just what's such a sad thing, as so many people suffer.
Yeah. So as a sex therapist, it sounds like you're doing a lot of education.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. That's a huge piece of it.
Yeah. Well, that's great.
Deb, we would love to have you back to talk more about this topic, because this comes up regularly in our work with folks and in our own discussions. We could do
a whole episode
just on this.
Absolutely.
This has been terrific.
Yeah.
Where do folks find you if they want to try to schedule an appointment or get some information about you and your practice?
I'm at www.debfox.com.
Excellent. Awesome. Well, thank you again so much for coming. This is Conversations for Couples, the podcast. Folks, you can find us at www.thebullits.com. And on all social media platforms at The Bullits. Thank you again, Deb. This has been wonderful. We're going to have you back soon.
Thank
you. Have a great day, everybody. Julie Bullitt is a professionally licensed clinical social worker and family therapist. David Bullitt is a divorce and family lawyer. Julie is not your therapist, and David is not your lawyer. This podcast is meant for educational and entertainment purposes only.